Sometimes I think that Ron Jaworski is kind of like that mad scientist creating a Frankenstein quarterback that's going to take over the world. How are you, Ron?
Nick, what do you mean you think I am? I am that mad scientist, man. I'm sitting in my office right now, Greg Cosell, NFL Films. We are breaking it down, been looking at the Bears-Saints game. Talked to Sean Payton this morning. Right now getting ready to look at the Colts game against New England.
And is the head of your Frankenstein quarterback Peyton Manning?
Well, yeah, right now he's the head of the class. There's no question of that. But I guess I'd have a little mixture of Tom Brady in there as well. Got a couple Vince Lombardi trophies in the trophy case, would certainly help.
Mm-hmm. How great an accomplishment. Rick Goslin just said this was the defining moment for Peyton Manning in the defining game of his career, and the Super Bowl would actually be anticlimactic. Do you agree?
No, I disagree. It certainly was a defining game for Peyton Manning, but if he is able to win the Super Bowl and clutch that Vince Lombardi trophy, certainly that would be the defining moment. I mean, there's no question Peyton has taken the proverbial monkey off his back with an outstanding game and about as good a second half as you will ever see a quarterback play against a great defense. When you think of the intelligence and athletic ability of that New England defense, and they were able to put 32 points on the board in the second half, shows me what a great performance Peyton Manning and the Colts offense had in that game. By doing that, you know, he got the weight of the world off his shoulders. But I know Peyton well enough. He understands the rich history and tradition of the National Football League, and particularly the quarterback position. And he knows that his career will ultimately be defined by winning a world championship.
I'm looking at a Steve Young 6-touchdown performance. It's going to be interesting to see how he breaks off and cements this trophy. But tell us about where this ranks in your book in terms of the greatest comebacks of all time.
Well, I mean, when you look at the championship games, it clearly is the most remarkable of all time. And when I look at how he did it, you know, there was a point in that second quarter after Asante Samuel took the interception back for a touchdown where the score is 21-3. The next possession that the Colts have, you know, Peyton gets a delay a game, which you never see. I mean, he's always got that 30-second clock in his vision. You know, I think at that point, you know, the Colts offense and Peyton Manning were rattled. I mean, they got a standing 8 count at that point. So it made it much more improbable that they would come out in the second half and play as great as they did. And I mean this sincerely when I said it. You know, that wasn't some schlock defense that they went up and down the field against in that second half. That's one of the most disciplined, most intelligent, one of the best defenses you will play against week in and week out in the National Football League. So I think that made it even more remarkable.
And the telling thing for me was 4 consecutive impressive drives where the Patriots started to cramp up. To me, that meant he had literally reached their Achilles heel.
Or the flu caught up with the Patriots, or the fact that it was hot, you know, in the RCA Dome, or the fact, and I think this has probably been overlooked, and I haven't heard much about it. You know, when you look at New England, they had to play the wild card game. They had to play the Jets in a very tough physical game. You know, then they have another tough game that they got to get by. Then, you know, that's what makes it that much tougher. What people don't realize is you look at a percentage chance of getting to the Super Bowl, and you want to give yourself the best percentage chance, and that is getting the bye week, getting a week for your players to rest, to condition, to get healthy. New England did not have that luxury.
But on the other hand, that hasn't seemed to help Marty Schottenheimer. What about the fact that if the Patriots had played a game near the East Coast rather than going all the way across the country, everyone was saying when they got back from San Diego, they were worn out for 2 or 3 days.
Well, it was a tough physical game out there in San Diego, too, which, again, it just goes to show me. You know, the Jets game, it's one of their arch rivalries. That was a physical game. You travel, you know, 5.5 hours to the West Coast. You play a tough physical football team. I mean, it was a grueling, grinding, you know, slugfest, hit him in the mouth, kick out a football game, which is always the game you're going to get when you play against a Marty Schottenheimer football team. So they were a pretty banged-up football team on that flight back to New England. All of a sudden, there you go, the next week. You know, you got to go up against the Colts in their backyard, you know that's going to be a tough game. And really, for 10 quarters, the Patriots were playing at a very high level. The second half, I believe they just ran out of gas.
Let's go to the matchup itself, Ron. And we talked with our friend Len Dawson, who you've been on the show with before, and Michael Strahan, about the other side of the ball.
Is that the mindset of a defensive team? Is that, hey, my attitude is they are not going to get it done?
That's exactly right. It's all about attitude. It's an offense when you need that drive in the fourth quarter. You decide you're going to get it done. For us defensively, you know, especially in these playoffs, I know for the Colts, they've taken a lot of ribbing about not being able to stop the run. So I'm sure those guys collectively probably got together and say, hey, this is what we have to do in order to be successful and win.
That's Michael Strahan. So looking at the other side of the ball, is it as simple as the Colts stopping Cedric Benson and Thomas Jones?
Pretty much, yes. You know, the one thing that you know, the Chicago Bears, their foundation is running the football. You look at how, and it's the power running game. You look how their offense is built, particularly the offensive line. This is not a movement, the counter tray, misdirection offensive line. It's not an athletic offensive line. It's a road grader bunch. They come off the bus. It's downhill, power running. They very seldom go east to west. They very seldom use misdirection. They get a body on a body. They try to move the pile. If they're able to move the pile, they keep their offense on schedule. They can go to the play-action passing game and Rex Grossman and allow him to attack deep down the field, which they've been very successful with when they run the football well. So I think clearly when you look at the Chicago Bears in this matchup, it's going to be paramount. They run the football.
And let's look at Rex Grossman. I mean, we talk about the confidence, the resurgent confidence that Peyton Manning had with this game, this defining game for him. What about for Rex Grossman?
Well, I actually thought he struggled in the game last week. I just got done going through that tape. He had some opportunities for some plays, overthrew some guys, and missed some reads as well. Left some plays on the field, as I like to say. And it was clear to me the way New Orleans played that game. They wanted to get a lead. I think they wanted to put the ball in Rex Grossman's hands, playing from behind. You know, they wanted the Bears to have to throw the football, not want to throw the football. And, you know, if you have a good offense is throw the football when they want to, not when they have to. I think what the Colts will try to do is try to get a fast start to this game, put that Bears offense in a known situation where they have to throw the football. Then, of course, the pressure begins to mount on Rex Grossman.
Let's look at the injury situation. Two key parts to that Colts' ability to stop the run. We asked Bill Polian about Nick Harper and Bob Sanders. Sanders, how are they?
They're fine. Nick has a basketball sprain of his ankle, and I think he'll be able to go. We'll probably hold him out of practice this week. Bob's fine. He came through the game fine.
So if they're fine, how much is this special player, Bob Sanders, really the catalyst for the confidence and the chance for them to completely turn around? Really, the history, the entire season was about giving up 100 yards. They haven't done it yet.
Well, Nick, I think there was one key word that you can't overlook in what Bill Polian said. He thinks he'll be fine. The key word is think. You know, and so that means they don't know. And Bill used the term basketball sprain. To me, isn't that kind of a high ankle sprain, which at times we know these things take 4 to 6 weeks to heal. So I think, you know, I don't want to overlook that as saying it's a given that Nick Harper is going to be fine for the Super Bowl. And that would be a dramatic loss to the Colts defense. Because as I looked at them, how they've been able to be successful in the playoffs, obviously Bob Sanders has been absolutely magnificent. Not only in his range going sideline to sideline and pass defense, but as the eighth defender down in the box. And when they use that eighth defender down in the box, that means your corners are on an island. They're in single coverage. And Nick Harper has certainly played terrific. And I think that is absolutely key that he is there. Jason David on the other side and Marlon Jackson, when he comes inside of their nickel packages, have been very, very good. So I don't want to discount the Nick Harper injury. If he's not 100%, that's a big blow to the Colts. Now, of course, you know, we'll be talking about that ad nauseum for the next 14 or 15 days.
And speaking of that, I don't know about you, but I think in a minor way, the way it was with the BCS, when you have this extra long break, and of course 50 days is not the same as 14, but the extra hype, the extra week can sometimes lead to a lackluster game.
Yeah, I think, you know, history has shown it to be that way, but I think when you look at the magnitude of the Super Bowl itself, you almost need that 2 weeks of preparation, not necessarily for the football team, but I think for the fans involved, the extravaganza that it is, the people to get their airline tickets, their travel accommodations, all those things in place. I mean, it doesn't happen overnight. When you're talking about the transportation of probably 40 to 50,000 people down to South Florida, in fact, I'm looking forward to that myself, to getting some nice warm weather in beautiful South Florida. I think you almost need that extra week to get all those things accomplished.
Well, let's talk about the matchup there with the hype itself, with two coaches, and of course, this historical significance of two African American coaches. You could argue that perhaps Lovie Smith might defer, if you will, as competitive as he is. There's so much respect between the two. He actually came down to their game against Herman Edwards and the Chiefs, sat in the stands, paid for his own ticket. How does that play into this?
Well, obviously, first and foremost, these are two outstanding football coaches, you know, and I'm, you know, privileged to call both of those guys my friends. I have great respect for what they've accomplished, and I do find it kind of interesting. You know, there's obviously a lot of headlines. It's the first time not only one black coach is in the Super Bowl, but two black coaches in the Super Bowl, and quite honestly, I've never looked at Tony or Lovie that way. I just saw them as two outstanding football coaches. I've been around them. I've been fortunate to be in their company. These guys are not only outstanding football coaches, they're outstanding human beings. But the fact that they are able to lead their organizations, you know, both taking over to a certain degree stagnant organizations, now leading them each to the Super Bowl, I mean, shows the type of quality football coaches they are and leaders of men that they are.
Final question in our last 20 seconds. They've both been described as people with a certain level of serenity. And we both know a Dick Vermeil. How much does that remind you of a Dick Vermeil, the sort of overweening confidence and serenity?
Well, I think you have to have confidence. There's no question of that. There are a lot of ways to lead. Some guys have their emotions on their sleeve, and some guys are very calm on top. But you know what they say about the duck, though? It looks very calm on top of the water, but you look below the water, and those feet are flailing away.
Well, you and I have been flailing away for a long time, buddy, and it's paid off. Thanks for joining us, Ron. You're
Thanks,
the best.
Nick.
Have a good week. Ron Jaworski, when we come back, Australian Open with Luke Jensen on Head Games on Sports Byline and Sirius Channel 122. Stay with us.